Hello, my name is Ben Jenkins, and welcome back to another episode of the New Grad Radio Podcast. I'm so excited to bring to you today's special guest, Dr. Pauline Kaleja. Pauline is a senior lecturer and the director of postgraduate nursing and infection prevention and control programs at Griffith University, a leading university in Queensland, Australia. As we know, once we graduate from our undergraduate degrees and we enter the workforce as registered nurses, by no means is that the end of our study. There are a number of different options available to us in order to keep improving our skills, improving our knowledge, and to keep pushing towards those goals of ours within this absolutely incredible profession. And one way of doing that is by studying postgraduate qualifications. But it can often be quite confusing about the differences between each of these qualifications. But Pauline does a fantastic job in breaking down these differences, providing some excellent insight and providing some food for thought about what to consider when you are applying for a postgraduate qualification. But before we got into that, I was so excited to hear Pauline's story. As you'll hear, there's quite a lot of variety in Pauline's journey. And it really, to me, highlights just how varied of an experience and a career that we can have as registered nurses, and just the amount of options that are available to us, especially if we push ourselves outside of our comfort zone. So, as always, if you have any feedback whatsoever, please feel free to send it through to the New Grad Radio Podcast Facebook page. But otherwise, I introduce to you today, Dr. Pauline Kaleja.
Hi there, Pauline, and thank you so much for being on the New Grad Radio Podcast today.
Thanks, Ben.
That's awesome. I'm just having a bit of a chat, and I was just saying that you've had such an extensive career. It's pretty much everything that we've got on my page here. It's filled up pretty much the entirety of the two pages I'm writing on. That's how much clinical and education experience you've had. But before I get underway, so you're currently the senior lecturer at Griffith University, which is located in Brisbane here in Queensland. Mm-hmm. You're the director of postgraduate nursing and infection prevention and control programs, as well as the program director for emergency nursing programs. So when it comes to postgraduate qualifications, I think you are all over it.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of information about that.
And I was just saying that I think a large number of the audience that are listening to this today are either finishing uni or just entered into the workplace. And I think it would be great just to highlight the differences between the different postgraduate qualifications, going over things like the graduate certificates, all the way up to masters and PhD and all that sort of fun stuff. So,
sure, no worries.
Before we do that sort of stuff, I'd love to find out a bit more about yourself, Pauline.
Okay, so I was actually one of the fourth groups of people through university in Queensland. So I graduated in 95. I finished my program, and it sounds like a long time ago now, but I vividly remember my grad year. I went to a very small hospital, a little rural, remote, well, it wasn't remote, it was rural, and, you know, at that stage people were still telling us that, you know, we wouldn't have a job in a few years because they'd go back to hospital training, and so it was very, you know, we were still very much new kids on the block for the way that training nurses occurred in Queensland. So, you know, it's come a long way since then, but some things don't change. And I think one of those things is how much of a development push that first year can be, regardless of how much amazing experience you have in your pracs in your undergrad. So so I started, like, I went through James Cook University, was my Bachelor of Nursing Science degree, and I started working in a small little place called Air Hospital. And my friends in my friend group at uni, they all went and worked at the bigger hospital, and so it was really interesting comparing my experiences with theirs, because I worked with children, people with cancer, you know, people having heart attacks. After hours, we would cover the emergency department, and, you know, we could be dealing with someone who's palliative or doing a road transfer up the road to Townsville with a chest pain patient. So I had lots of variety and I had lots of really good adaptive experiences, whereas my friends who went to the pediatric ward or to, you know, orthopedic ward, they got lots of depth of knowledge but not a lot of variety as such. And I think that experience really predisposed me to being interested in having variety in my in my career. And you know, I think that probably predisposed me to actually having finding my home eventually when I got into an emergency department in a metro and regional area. So that's where I started. I then went and started having my family, and so I had a baby second year out, and then that changes everything as far as being able to work shift work and, you know, when you got family and whatnot. So for my early career, a lot of what happened for me was very opportunistic, and I guess because I was looking for things that would work with my family as well as, you know, my love of variety, I worked in lots of different roles. I was probably one of the youngest clinical nurses in a project third year out. So I am what you guys know as the Home IV program today, we actually did the very first pilot in Queensland along with one other pilot site down here in Toowoomba. So that was at the Townsville Hospital. So that was amazing. And I guess for me, the reason myself and colleagues who'd been to uni with me got that job was because the people who had experience didn't think it was a very good idea and didn't think it would be very well taken up. And so when the service became successful, it was a really interesting change in dynamics. But again, you know, working with variety, working with something that was new and exciting really piqued my interest in project work. And, you know, I got to work in the hospital, back out in the community, in and out of the ED. You know, it was really an interesting role. And because I was the person with the small child and therefore working part-time, I got to work in the Home IV program. We also had another project with that team that I covered, which was the post-acute wound care program. And I also did backfill in that role with the discharge planner, which was only a new role back in, my goodness, what year was that? 1997, 98, yes. Wow. So, you know, that was really great. And then I travelled a bit around because my husband at the time got moved for work. And so I then found myself working in a small town and looking for work. And I worked in general practice where I did my immunisation program endorsement because that was needed. Sure. And then we moved again and went back into emergency work into a larger place. And so, you know, I did move around quite a lot and get a bit of variety. And then I had an opportunity to work overseas and I jumped on that. So I relocated my family over to Canada and I worked in Edmonton in Alberta. And so that was a really big move for me. I was probably, that was what, 2000? And one, I started over in Canada and I was in, went from Cairns-based ED where I was into, at the time, the University of Alberta Emergency Department was the largest ED in Canada.
Oh.
So that was a really big change for me, not just because I was going to another country. At least everyone spoke English. Well, they appeared to. But, you know, it's really interesting. The first 2 months, really, the biggest challenge for me in Canada was getting over the jargon component as well as the role differences for an RN in an emergency department. They had been there was quite a large role difference there, and we were the first nurses outside of Canada to come into the country in about 15 years. So that had a change.
There's a lot of firsts in your career.
Yeah, there are. Now that I talk about it like this, there is. I've been involved in lots of changing things and
right at the forefront of it all.
And I guess that's really taught me how to deal with, you know, anxiety around change and that sort of thing, because you sort of have to get over that pretty quick when you've moved as many times in workplaces as I have. I guess for me though, that gives me a really broad experience and makes you really trust your own knowledge and skills adaptability. Yeah, so
having to meet into new teams and to be able to meet new people and to fit into that team. That's right. Yeah.
Look, for me, there's a few things in my career that are real pivotal before and after points, and working in Canada was one of those. Coming home to Australia after being there for a year, so I was over there for 12 months, and coming home, like, I had changed considerably in my abilities, my knowledge, like, so much. And it was really quite an interesting experience because I came back to the same department in Cairns in the ED there, and very interesting experience trying to fit back into a team where you've grown so much and the people you left behind are probably not as changed as you have been in that time.
Sure.
Then I sort of fell into teaching. I sort of noticed that when I was overseas, within about 4 months, I was being asked to mentor and buddy up with new staff, and I really enjoyed that. And so when I came home to Australia, an opportunity fell in my lap to teach Indigenous primary healthcare workers basic clinical skills at the TAFE. And again, small child, those hours worked for me. So I did part-time work in the ED and did that. And then they asked me if I would basically run their program. They had a new, here's another first, a new program. They were taking Indigenous primary healthcare workers into private general practice, and it was a pilot. They didn't know how it would go, and they needed someone who had variable experiences to teach that and support those guys. So
sounds like you.
That was me. I did that. Yes. And and then, you know, that in amongst that, my husband and I moved back to Townsville, and I really found that I was enjoying the teaching, and people seemed to like me teaching them. And so I thought, you know what, it's now not quite 10 years since I had graduated from my bachelor's, and I thought, you know, this teaching gig is really, really nice. I really enjoy it. And so I thought, I'd like to apply for a university. You know, that's probably the next step. It's probably a little bit more secure than doing bits and pieces of projects. And I had done some clinical facilitation work up in Cairns with JCU, and I really liked that. And so I applied for a position at JCU, but I knew that I wouldn't even be considered if I'd didn't enroll in my master's. So I had sort of been a very mediocre undergraduate student. You know, I was interested in life rather than study.
The only reason you get to go through your undergrad once, isn't it?
That's right. Pass. That's about what I did in my undergrad. Mind you, like, we had a really interesting time coming into the undergrad because they were still learning what they needed to know about how to run a degree for nursing.
Oh, for sure, being so fresh into it all, that's right.
Yeah, look, I can remember we went into our science components of our degree, and the dean said, you know, look on either side of you at the end of your degree, there'll only be one of you here.
Oh, goodness.
And they were right. We had a two-third dropout. You know, we only graduated with a third of our class because we had a really significant science component to our degree. Anyway.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so I thought, well, you know, I should probably go and do my master's. And so I got the job and I did my master's while I was working there and still worked part-time, you know, just keeping my hand in at the ED. So I did that and found I really did actually like this teaching thing, but I still really liked being very practical and working, you know, working in the ED. So essentially, after being there for 3 years, I had some personal stuff going on, so I moved down to Sunshine Coast. I got a job at the University of Sunshine Coast there. Here's another first, Ben. Helped them start their program. Oh. They hadn't taught nursing at Sunshine Coast before, and so for the first 9 months of 2007, I helped them develop their program there. And at this stage, it had become very clear to me that if I ever wanted to be more than a lecturer or a level B staff member in a university, I really wouldn't be competitive. No one would employ me on a permanent basis without a PhD or be working towards a PhD. But the other thing I had realised when I was in Canada, I guess something that was really different for me seeing things over there, was that there were so many roles nurses could do and useful roles. So in Canada I saw and had great contact with nurse educators who worked clinically on the floor, the nurse managers who would actually chip in if we got completely inundated. And then they had these nurse researcher roles that I'd never seen really in Australia, of people on the floor doing research in ED. And I sort of thought, you know what, when my daughter's old enough, I'd love to be able to work overseas again without having to only have, you know, the choice of doing shift work. And so when those opportunities of education and teaching roles came up, I sort of thought, you know, this doing these things will help me get to my goal of being able to work overseas again and have choice. And really that was in the back of my mind when I decided to do my PhD. And it wasn't doing it because I loved research. That was certainly not me. I decided to go ahead and do my PhD because it would give me other opportunities that would necessarily be closed if I didn't have that qualification.
Sure.
In amongst all of that, I changed universities again because the traffic was so bad between Sunshine Coast and Brisbane.
I'm from the Sunshine Coast and I totally understand.
You get it, right?
I do.
I think I missed like 3 PhD meetings with my supervisors because of traffic. And I thought, this is crazy. I can't keep doing this. And so I ended up moving to Brisbane and I worked at QT for 5 years while I was doing my PhD. And I got to do some really interesting things there. You know, I went and worked in on a project in Vietnam with the guys at QT. And I got to that stage where I'd collected all of my data for my study and I thought, you know, I haven't been able to work a lot clinically. Like I was working in a couple of EDs and agency just to keep my clinical skills together. And I thought, oh, I've been in education now solidly for a while. Sure. I've got no management experience really, and I've established myself as an educator. I'm getting the research stuff together and I've kept my clinical competencies up to date. I need to see if I can get some management experience. And so I applied for and got a director of nursing position out in rural, remote Queensland in Barcaldine. And so I moved the family out there. I got, you know, leave my daughter again, all those sorts of things that you do to your poor old kids.
Keeping it interesting.
Yeah.
What I love is this is so goal-driven. Like, you know, you understand what you need to be working towards and you're actively doing it. You're not just thinking about it. You're just like, you know what I want to do? I want to go do that. And you just do it.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
And, you know, I think the thing is that, you know, some people said to me, you'll never get a job as a manager because people would only see you as an educator. And that's absolutely the wrong thing to say to someone like me. If I want to do something, you know, it makes me more determined. So I actually had to quit my job before I got another job, because at that stage in the university's sector, you had to give at least 3 to 6 months notice. And there's no Queensland Health position that's going to wait 6 months for you. So I had to, again, trust that I would be okay. And luckily I was. So I went and did the director of nursing role, and I loved that. Absolutely challenged me in ways that I didn't know I would be challenged. But it also allowed me to bring in all the skills I had learnt, you know, like all the trauma and emergency care and all the teaching stuff that I had learnt and the conflict resolution stuff that I had been doing with the roles I'd had in the university. And then funnily enough, I finished my PhD while I was out there, and I thought, you know, of what use can my PhD be to a clinical management position? And it was so useful, because if I wanted to change stuff, my budget, my model of practice, all those sorts of things, I needed to be able to build a relevant, concise argument with evidence to back me up. And guess what your PhD does? You know?
It's exactly that.
You have to be able to argue and argue convincingly. And so that was a really big surprise for me. So by this stage, my family said, okay, enough's enough. It's time to go back to places where they can access universities and whatnot. So came back to Brisbane, and that's when I came to Griffith. And I started at Griffith as just the program director for emergency. Rewrote that program based on other stuff. So while I was out west, I was really heavily involved with the College of Emergency Nursing Australasia. Yeah. Before I had went out there, I had been on the committee, the Queensland committee, and, you know, working with the education portfolio there and reviewing on the journal and whatnot, because who doesn't need to do more work when they go home, right? That's sort of what I was doing. And then when I came back to Brisbane, I actually applied for and got the national coordinator role for the SENA trauma nursing program. And so I spent 2 years on a consultancy project through Griffith, working to update and rework the development of that program and grow it across Australia. And so, you know, that was a really interesting space to be in, because you're a professional organisation working with, you know, across the country for trauma education that has to meet rural remote needs, major metro trauma hospital needs. You know, it was a really interesting thing to do. So I did that. And then after that project finished, I was approached to come on board and develop another first. Here we go. And that's the we've developed a graduate support program for rural and remote nurses who go and work out bush. And we started that in 2017 with Retrieval Services Queensland. And that's about when I got involved with AQNML as well. Yeah. And, you know, we've had a runaway success with that program, which was only ever meant to be for graduates and novices. We get every single person in the team come to education that we deliver out west.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and we've had, you know, we really expected to be able to provide some level of education. We didn't even have a brief really as to what we were supposed to provide. We knew that we had to provide things by telehealth, and so we do. Up until this week, we've had 6,800 attendances to the education we've provided either by telehealth or face-to-face when we do trips out west to teach workshops in that program.
Very needed too. That is incredible work.
Yeah, it's huge.
You've quite literally come full circle too. You've come back to where you started off in your own graduate journey, starting off in a rural area, and then here you are teaching into it and developing all this sort of stuff as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's about, I guess my career's had a significant amount of variety and that's what I've loved about it. You know, I probably just get bored a bit easy, and that's why, you know, I've been open to new opportunities. But that's what I love about nursing, is that you can move around either within the discipline areas and specialty areas or within roles and never leave your underlying career. You know, like before I went into emergency, I worked ophthalmic theatres, I worked in, you know, rural, remote, in the community. The only place that I haven't really worked in is cancer care services. So, you know, it's interesting.
I very much think so too. That's great.
So that's probably enough CV from me, right?
No, but that's just at moments there, you're saying that you were juggling multiple things at once. I think one thing that the biggest question I have on my mind is how you dealt with stress. Obviously, you've got a lot going on at every time. What sort of things have you put into place to overcome these sort of stressful times?
Yeah, look, I think
as well as having a family and all, so many things going on.
I guess stress is different for different people. There was a time there where I had significant personal stresses going on, and study saved my sanity. You know, being able to do something positive for me when everything in your personal life is going to the dogs is really very empowering. So for what some people, that might have just been too stressful, too many added things. But for me, it was my escape, and that's how I saw my master's study. And I've also found that, you know, when something has to be going well. So if work is going terribly and home is okay, I've been able to cope. But if work is good and home is terrible, I've been able to cope. But if both of those are stressful at the same time, for me, that's been when I've been in crisis and needed to reach out and get support, which is really hard to accept, I think. And that's part of, you know, when you're in a caring profession, actually accessing and accepting support can be the biggest challenge. But having people that you feel safe to talk to and giving yourself a bit of permission to just do nothing or socialize to let your brain lighten, they're important things, particularly for me when I was working clinically. And I guess for me when I've been overrun with things, because I've said yes, you know, I have a problem with saying no. I'm getting better at that. But sometimes I just have to think, well, you know, what really is the problem here? Why am I overwhelmed? Is this my issue, or is it the fact that actually people have seen that you're capable and keep giving you things because they believe in you? And the other thing I think that's helped me cope with stress is that not everyone else's emergency has to be mine. You know, like even if I agree to do things, often there's room to negotiate, but I find nurses are not so great at that. They're not so great at saying, well, is this the timeline that this really needs to happen in? It might be your timeline, but does it have to actually be that? And so for me, juggling things is more about actually being rational and realistic about what is the priority. And come back to my emergency background, if no one is bleeding and everyone's breathing, then, you know, there's time to think about these things.
Oh, that's fantastic, Pauline. Thank you so much for going over that as well. That's great. It's no, I think as young people coming in now, coming through uni, I think we have so much pressure to have to specialize straight away. We have so much pressure to have to stay in the same place, because if you leave too soon, then it's judged as bad and you're skimping out going somewhere else. So I think it's such a highlight to hear someone's career where you've taken advantage of the opportunities in front of you and realized what you want to do. What are your own goals? Mm. What do you want to be pushing towards? And just taking that jump and going for it.
I think, you know, when you talk about people leaving a job without having been there very long, there is always a story behind people's CVs. Like, if you look at my CV, it's ridiculous. I've worked in so many different roles. But when you say, yeah, so I've moved this time because my husband moved town for his job, you know. So for me, opportunities that came up that I jumped on were either about I had, some, you know, a small child and no family. And so people, they get that, you know. But if you don't have a reasonable story as to why you need to move on, then that's when the connotations really stick. And I think a lot of people are more afraid of what other people think they might think than what might actually be true. And it just comes back to telling your story when you're looking at why you're doing what you're doing. Mm. What does this mean, and how do I make that clear to future employers? You know, by the time I got to University of Sunshine Coast, they looked at me like I was, you know, dipped in gold because I'd had theatre experience and emergency experience and metro and rural remote and community and emergency. And, you know, like, they went, oh, my God. They didn't look at me and go, you're not going to stay very long with us.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I think sometimes you need to think about how do I talk about this? And I certainly don't think that time in positions is more important than what skills you can transfer, because you can be in a position for a long time and not actually be able to transfer those skills across. And that's much more important than someone who has jumped around into different roles.
Hmm. Excellent. So you've spent quite a bit of time of your own going in and upskilling yourself and doing a whole bunch of other courses and masters and PhD and everything. So I'd love to transition the conversation into this today.
Sure.
So I think for a lot of people who are finishing their undergrad at the moment, we haven't really considered about what comes next. It's about getting the job or in the job now. But I think a lot of people who could be working on the job for so long haven't started any sort of stuff yet because they're afraid of having to go back to uni and do more assignments, and just the fear of having to work shift work as well as having to go home and study on the side can be a lot. But I think I'd like just to start off with really what are postgraduate qualifications? Like what are we really trying to get from them?
Yeah. Look, in Australia, it's different in different countries. So, but in Australia, postgrad qualifications are desirable as opposed to required, unless you're going to be a nurse practitioner, or unless you're in a very specialised environment such as, you know, sexual health or something that you're in an advanced practice role. Okay. So a lot of people, you know, it's really interesting that you say most people in your position or at university haven't yet thought about what next, but that's changing. I'm seeing many more people wanting to transition straight from finishing their undergrad and actually apply for our postgrad programs before they even graduate.
Yeah, okay.
Right. And a lot more people coming in within 12 months, you know, of graduating. They've done their first year, or they've nearly done their first year, and they're wanting to get started. They don't want to let themselves get too far down the track of forgetting how to deal with assignments before they get started again. So I find that there's more of that happening. As far as the different types of qualifications. Your undergrad qualification is what gives you registration, right? And so unless you go and do a postgrad midwifery degree or a postgrad master's that leads to a nurse practitioner role, there's not a lot of other postgrad degrees that lead to an accredited endorsement on your registration. And that means that there is a lot more scope for variation in postgraduate offerings. And so because of that, people need to really be aware of why they want to do a qual and choose the one that's going to best suit their needs. So some people want to do their postgrad qual because it gives them an extra 50 cents an hour in their paycheck for recognition at work. Some people do it because they want more knowledge depth in the area. They want to be standing out from the crowd when they're thinking about their progression through into being promoted or being considered for things. And then other people have longer pathways, like they want to do nurse practitioner, but to get in they have to have another postgrad qual, or they want to do a PhD, but they don't have an honours component to their bachelor that lets them get straight in, so they have to do something else. Or they want to be considered, you know, at master's level for their specialisation area. So it really depends a lot on why you're doing it and what's available to you. Unfortunately, I see a lot of people come through and they just pick the first thing they see, and they don't necessarily look into it deep enough to see whether it's the right program for them. Is it the right length? Is it, you know, really going to give them what they want to do? So the first piece of advice I give anybody is don't just go and jump into the first program you see because you can get in. Make sure you're applying for the program that has the electives you want to do, if there's electives, or if it's a grad cert, you know, and there's no electives, actually, can you access the details of what the subjects are or the courses are within that program? Because you want to, this is going to be a significant investment in yourself, not just money-wise, but your time and your effort, you know, juggling with things. So you want to make sure that it's the one that fits what you want. So that's the first thing, is do your homework, check around, look at what people offer, look at what the entry requirements are, and look at how much time you've got to spend. Usually when people are working 0.8 to full time, I say to them, don't even think about starting more than one subject in your first semester of study, because even if you do it fairly soon after you've done your undergrad program, the level of expectation is different. You know, you will have changed even throughout your program, and if you've done clinical work for a little while, it's amazing how quickly your brain adjust to different types of work. So I can remember coming back into university work after I'd been out in Barcaldine for 3 years doing very reactive work as a clinical manager, and it took me 3 months to be able to concentrate in one space for as long as I used to. And that's a little bit about how we use our brains and how we think about things. So I usually say to people, just give yourself a break in that first semester of study. Do as little workload as you can for your study until you get to know the expectation, how that university's learning management system works, you know, where you find stuff. And then if you want to speed up, if you're at the right university, that will be flexible enough for you to do that. So there are some of the things to think about before you get started, and consider that for most university subjects, the commitment is around 10 to 15 hours a week of study for a subject. So if you're trying to do four subjects,
that's a lot of work.
You know, that's crazy. It's like, if you're, especially if you're working full time or 0.8. So just, you know, I say to people, you're paying for this, you're paying for your degree. So don't overload yourself so that all you're paying for is to hand an assignment in. Actually, you want to be able to access the resources they have for you. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily think about it in those terms. They don't think about what it's costing them and therefore just try and whip through and get through it as fast as possible. But again, it comes back to, why are you doing the study? Are you doing it to get a piece of paper? Are you doing it to improve your opportunities or increase your knowledge and so forth? That's a little bit of basic advice. Do you want me to talk a little bit about the different types of study, like grad cert, master's, PhD, that sort of thing?
Yeah, like one of the specific questions I had for you today, Pauline, would be the difference between a graduate certificate in emergency nursing versus a graduate certificate in critical care nursing. Because I know a lot of people in the workplace that I work in, a lot of my friends who, they all have that same question.
Yeah, okay. It's a good question. And sometimes it depends on the university. So if I say, for example, we're looking at a university down in I'm thinking of a couple in Victoria. Their critical care programs encompass emergency, whereas here in Queensland you'll find they'll be separate. They'll be critical care means ICU, HDU, PACU usually, and emergency is emergency because they aren't the same type of nursing. They have a lot of crossovers, but actually the focus of care is very different. And so just sometimes it depends on, you know, how the university pulls their topic areas together. You might find in those programs that have a critical care degree that encompasses emergency, they'll still have divisions within their content areas that is about emergency care versus ongoing high acuity care that you see in HDUs and ICUs. So I guess there's no really one answer. It does depend on the university and what it encompasses. Sure.
Because I think the mindset of that question from a lot of the people are, oh, okay, if that's the case, I've had some experience in ICU and I've had some experience in ED, so it'd be best to do something like a critical care, that way I can work in both, as opposed to, oh, look, I've just had experience in ED, that way I should just do the emergency, the grad cert.
And see, that's probably not the best way to look at things. I say to people, you really want to do the degree not for what you need now, but what you need in 4 to 5 years' time. So if you want to be working in emergency and that's where you want your career to sit, you need to do an emergency program. Mm. If you want to be working in intensive care or NICU or whatever, you need to be doing the program that's going to give you the qualification for that area. And there are a few people who jump around, you know, regularly between intensive care units and emergency environments. Usually those people are best off going for the programs that have the wider encompassing that allows them to do everything. But that doesn't mean that hospitals are going to recognise that as such. Mm. So, you know, I suggest people don't think about looking backwards. Think about looking forwards and what you want this degree to do for you and take you. Where do you want it to take you?
That's fantastic. Thank you, Pauline. And then once you finish the grad cert and then the differences between a graduate diploma and a master's.
Sure. So in 2015, the Australian government brought in this thing called the Australian Qualifications Framework. Up until that point, you could do a master's program that was 8 subjects, 10 subjects, 12 subjects. Like, it was very variable. And so the AQFs and the other thing was that the difference at that stage, before that point, between a grad cert, a grad dip, and a master's was the number of subjects that you did. So when the AQF came in 2015, they said you know, a bachelor degree has these types of learning outcomes. A graduate certificate can be this length. A graduate diploma can be this length, and they are AQF level 8, and they must have these type of learning outcomes. And then when you get to master's level, you have to have expertise, not just demonstrated knowledge. You have to have a certain amount of research component because you are seen as a master in your field. And when you then get to PhD, you know, that's a AQF level 10 degree. You have to not just have expertise, you have to create new knowledge. So what they did was basically say, it's not just about the number of subjects you do, it's about the level of learning that you do. So they bring grad cert and grad dip together, and the differences between those programs is usually number of subjects that you do at that level 8. Master's program is a level 9. They across Australia now, you have to have a minimum amount of research component, and that doesn't mean that you're a researcher. It means you know how to use the research to inform practice, essentially. And at the moment, unless they change anything, and they are talking about reviewing this in the near future, but at the moment, it's 120 credit point masters. So if you did a full-time masters, it's about a year and a half if you did 4 subjects a semester. That's about the workload for a masters, whereas a grad cert, grad dip could be anything from 6 to 12 months, depending, again, on how heavy a workload you give yourself. So that's sort of the differences. And when I explain this to people, I go, look, grad cert is you're specialising in content knowledge, and you're taking steps towards being specialised in a field or in a discipline. A master's is about taking you to a more advanced practice knowledge level and knowledge use level. And essentially, if you think about this, in terms of what do I get out of it? Well, as a grad cert, you explore those things that are going to help you be really successful clinically. Whereas a master's, you still do those because most degrees these days, you know, your first 4 subjects of your master's is your grad cert. So it's like a stacked degree. It builds on the knowledge. And then the other bits you get out of your master's is the ability to pick up the electives that suit you or the higher level knowledge and skills that you would need to be able to question practice better, create new practice, you know, write business plans or changes in models of care, those sorts of things. So the way I see things going, at the moment it's not quite this delineated yet, but I think very soon, if you want to go for a clinical nurse position, you'd be needing at least a grad cert. If you wanted to ever be a CNC or a nurse unit manager, you know, anything at that grade 7 level, you're probably going to need to be working towards the master's. And if you want to be a nurse practitioner in Australia, it's mandated that you must have a very specific master's that leads to registration as a nurse practitioner. So that's basically the differences in a nutshell. There are programs in masters as well that give you a pathway to PhD. So if you just do a basic coursework masters and then, like me, you decide you want to do a PhD for some reason, most times you would be required to go and do another research grad cert or something to get entry into a PhD. You have to have extenuating circumstances not to be made to do that pathway. I was lucky in that I had already published a number of papers and been involved in other people's research, and therefore I was able to make an argument to get straight into my PhD without doing something else. But, you know, we recognise now that that's probably that's actually harder than doing the research subjects that you need to get your basic training. So in many master's programs, and definitely at Griffith and at QUT, there is an option for you to do a dissertation within your master's coursework. So instead of doing four electives, you do a dissertation component where you do a small research project that gets supervised. And if you do well enough in that, that gives you direct entry then in a PhD if that's what you want to do. Some people choose to do that option if the university they go to doesn't have electives that they want to do and they want to really specialise in on something, or some people will do it because it gives them enough knowledge and skills to undertake a nurse researcher role within their environment or their specialisation field. So it's a nice little option if you ever think you might ever want to do anything related to research. You can do that within the master's program if you take the right stream.
That is incredible, Pauline. Thank you so much. I think that's absolutely invaluable information there. Coming straight from a director of exactly all of this. So thank you. Thank you for your time today, Pauline.
You're welcome.
That's it. Stu, would you like to finish with any final advice or anything at all?
Look, I think that the thing I hear over and over when I speak to graduates or people even just thinking about progressing their career is if you want something, actually talk to people before you jump, and don't let other people talk you out of things that are really what you want to do, because you know, essentially, this is your shot. This is your career and your opportunity. If people tell you that you shouldn't do it or can't do it, or, you know, grads shouldn't start studying in their grad year, you know, just remember that that's usually a reflection on them, not necessarily a reflection of what's true for you. So I think get good advice, make sure you talk to the right people. You know, the amount of people I talk to who've spoken to their friend at work about master's study who don't have masters, it's really quite sad, the amount of people who get wrong information or let themselves be swayed by people who actually don't necessarily know as much as what the right people know and can give you. It's just like, you know, when patients take advice, you don't want them taking advice from Google. You want them taking advice from the people who know what they're talking about. It's the same thing for doing study or, you know, going a different way in your career. Make sure you get the right information so you've got the information that you need to make the right choices for you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today, Pauline.
You're welcome, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you.